Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango the Three. I'm here for life, I'm here to die. Inside these walls, inside the wild.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Bloody Angola, a podcast 142 years in the making, the complete story of America's bloodiest prison. And I am Jim Chapman. And Woody should be back with us next week. This was pre-recorded. He had some things going on. So this is the part two in our Richest Man in Bloody Angola series on Wilbert Redo. And we're going to get right into the second part. Now, when I left you in part one of this series, it was the 90s. And Redo's popularity, y'all, was at an all-time high, not only in Bloody Angola, but also all around the country. He had become somewhat of a media darling, you could say. And the questions that come along with that, the questions he gets asked most often are, do you have any regret over what happened on the night in 1961? What is it like to be in solitary confinement? And also, what keeps him going inside the bloodiest prison in America? So, Wilbert had shown some growth, especially in the way of regret by the 90s. So, here's a clip of him in his own words expressing that regret.
You have to understand, this is the wasting that I've done in my life, probably the worst thing anybody would do in their life. And like most people, you try to put the your most shameful thing in the closet because it's difficult to live with. I hate what I did. I hate the person who did it. But you can't live hating yourself. at some point in time, you're going to jump out the window. That's just human psychology. So you try not to think about it. You do other things, yes. But, you know, it has a way of coming back to you. It always comes back to you.
Wilbert spent time in solitary confinement, not because of his discipline actions, y'all, but primarily because he was being moved around the prison so often. You got to remember, this is a guy that, you know, he was allowed to kind of go all over the country and talk to other prisoners and do all of these things outside of Angola. So rather than keep him in general population all the time, there was a lot of time he was on his own inside of a cell. And he talked about that a little bit and the challenges of being in a solitary environment. And here's that clip.
It was a 6x8 cell. We all live in individual cells, solitary confinement, 6x8 cells. And at that time, they would let us out of the cell twice a week for 15 minutes, during which time you had to take a shower, wash your clothes, shave, or do whatever you had to do during that 15-minute period. Twice a week. You know, people are social creatures. They're not meant to live alone. And I guess the worst company you can ask for is yourself.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
I mean, that's all you've got for company is just you. You, your thoughts, your life, your past, your behavior, your actions. And, I mean, that's all you've got. And you're removed from all of the social and psychological crutches that keep you normal and keep you human.
Now, the last question is probably the one he gets asked the most, and that's what keeps him going. And his response to that was very intriguing and interesting. I have that clip. So here's a clip of Redo answering just that question.
It's about routine. It's about carbon copied nothingness. Your entire existence is dedicated to trying to weave meaning into that, because every morning you wake up, you have to justify your existence to yourself, you know, because people in prison live for the same reasons you live. I mean, the same things that they have their dreams, they have their desires, they have their needs, and prison is all about deprivation. It's all about pain, misery, and suffering. And, you know, the present is an intolerable situation. So the only thing that keeps you going is the hope of tomorrow.
Hope, y'all. How many times have Woody and I said that? It's the hope that keeps you going, whether you're behind the wire in Angola or, you know, a free person just going about life. It was also the mid-90s that Wilbert had quite a bit of hope getting the clemency and full pardon he had sought for so long. Now, at this time, y'all, Buddy Romer was the governor of Louisiana, and he had agreed to meet with Redo at the governor's office personally to decide whether or not to grant him a full pardon. Redo had, you know, he was all over the paper at that time. They knew he was seeking and writing the governor requesting a pardon. And it was almost, you know, I'm sure in a way he felt pressured to have that meeting. So Redo arrives to meet face to face with the governor, and the conversation went like this. The first thing Governor Romer asked him was if there was anything Redo would like to say on his own behalf. And Redo thanked the governor for meeting with him and said, "I don't know what to tell you that you already don't know. Perhaps you have some questions for me." So the governor looks back at him and he says, "Well, my understanding is you took three people all the way out of the city, out into the woods, lined them up, and then shot them execution style." And Redo responds to that, and he says, "No, sir, it did not happen like that. I never intended to hurt anyone. Had I wanted to kill those people, I would have done it right there in the bank instead of running all over the place with them in tow. In fact, they even testified that I told the manager of the bank to grab his coat when he walked out of the bank because he was going to get cold walking home. I never would have said that if I intended at that time to kill anyone." And he makes a good point there. And they did testify that he said that. And so they go back and forth in a tense conversation of the crime for quite a while. And throughout this conversation, it kind of starts to relax. And by the end of this meeting, they were chatting like old friends. And the governor tells Rito that he would now have to rethink his position and he would be following up with Rito on it. So Rito leaves that meeting and he's pumped up. I mean, this was a good meeting with the governor of the state of Louisiana. And for all intents and purposes, it seemed like this guy had come around to wanting to grant him that pardon. There's one problem, though. The governor at that time, Governor Reimer, he was running for re-election, and this would not be the best time to announce releasing a former death row inmate back into society, even if it was Wilbert Rito. So he delays it. Long story short, Reimer loses his re-election bid, and with it, Rito loses his chance at freedom. Now, prior to this situation, Rito had someone in his corner that was working very hard for his release, and her name was Linda LaBranche. And Linda was a very smart legal researcher. Y'all, she had a PhD from Northwestern, an Ivy League college, right? And she had reached out to Rito years before after hearing about him and his case on a news show at that time called Nightlife, and wanted to offer assistance with his pardon. Now, throughout everything they worked on together, they eventually fall in love. And you can only imagine her disappointment when the governor did not pardon Rito, even when he left office, much less her disappointment that he didn't win re-election and follow up on his, you know, on what they thought was going to be a surefire pardon for Rito. Now, here is Rito describing how he and Linda came to meet and her contributions to his case.
She met with the director of corrections at a corrections convention in Chicago where she lived at and asked him about me. She asked him if, you know, I was really being jerked around, if everything she was reading was true. And he agreed and he told her he was a personal friend of mine and he invited her to come down and meet me. And I was the first prisoner she ever knew in her life. In fact, she was actually a conservative who believed that the justice system did what it's supposed to do and that there were no innocent people in prison. And, I mean, that's how she thought back then. She's since changed her perspective on things considerably. She tried to help me in different ways. She felt that, you know, she was one of those people who felt that if she could gather facts and reason, you know, people will understand and do the right thing. And it didn't quite work that way, but she ultimately investigated and got the evidence that convinced the federal court to reverse my conviction and give me another trial. And she also investigated and found a lot of the evidence that and the things that allowed my lawyers in the trial to present to a jury that showed that what all happened, what the prosecutor said happened, didn't all happen the way they said it did. In other words, I committed a crime, yes, but I didn't do everything they said. I didn't do what they said I did.
So you heard it towards the end of that clip. Rito gets a new trial based off of some evidence that Linda had dug up, which had conflicting accounts of what happened way back in 1961. Initially, people were surprised that the DA in Calcasieu Parish was even going to seek to prosecute again. Now, if anyone at any prison in the world appeared to be rehabilitated, it was Wilbert Rito. But prosecute is just what the district attorney did. And Wilbert is moved from Angola to Calcasieu Parish in their jail to go through that trial. So what's the first thing you do when you're Wilbert Rito with his popularity and you get a fourth trial in your conviction? Well, Yamana Legal Dream Team, pretty much. And he did just that. With his notoriety, there was no shortage of defense lawyers, high-powered, many of them, that wanted to do his case pro bono. Some of them felt, you know, I'm sure they all felt that he needed to be released at this point, that he was rehabilitated, but also it does a heck of a lot for their career, right? So I'm going to read you an article from February of 2003 on the legal team representing Wilbert Rito, and you may recognize one of these names in particular. So the article says, there's been a surprising new development in the Wilbert Rito case. Famous district attorney Johnny Cochran has come to Lake Charles to help defend Rito as he faces his fourth murder trial. The case is bogged down in motions related to which judge will preside over the case. Cochran questioned Calcasieu Parish District Attorney Rick Bryant, who spent 45 minutes on the witness stand answering questions related to Judge Patricia Minaldi's employment as an assistant DA. Cochran wants Minaldi recused from Rito's trial, and I thought the court struck an appropriate chord. We talked about fairness in the administration of justice and whether or not Wilbert Rito would get a fair trial. And they gave us some limited amount of discovery on some of the issues we have raised. And so I think it was a good day. It was a good day. Cochran will be back in court. He says they are still looking for a new judge in the Wilbert Rito case, especially since this is his fourth trial. He hopes it can be done right this time. For those following the Wilbert Rito fourth trial for murder, it's hard to avoid the feeling of going in circles. Below is a report filed by Teresa Schmidt late last year. Hopefully it will help you understand the numerous court filings and the revolving door of judges in this case. Rito arrived here in July of 2001, and after pleading not guilty to murder, Judge Mike Cannaday became the first judge to get the case. The defense challenged the lottery system and used to pick judges. And so in November of 2001, Judge Wilford Carter was randomly selected for the Rito trial. Defense was happy with Carter, but prosecutors were not, since as a state rep, he advocated for Rito's release before a state pardon board. Ultimately, Third Circuit and state Supreme Court rulings got Carter off the case. Next, Judge Patricia Minaldi gets the Rito case. That was in June of 2002, and Minaldi set the trial for September 9th, but the defense moves to get her off the case using tactics and insinuations that prosecutors say crossed the line. When Minaldi refused to recuse herself, that issue had to be referred to another judge. The clerk's office randomly assigned Judge Albert Gray, but prematurely says the court. So Gray's appointment was rescinded, and Judge Kent Savoie randomly picked to hear the recusal issue, which gives way to the latest battle. And it kind of goes on from there. Look, they went through like 10 judges. This is why this case took so long to get from the point where he was transferred to the Lake Charles area jail to stand trial and the actual trial starting. But yes, Johnny Cochran, was part of his legal defense team.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Now, sadly, Johnny Cochran passed away of cancer just before the trial started, but it did indeed start in January of 2005 among some heavy media fanfare. And this article from January 10th of that year covers the opening of the trial, and I think it says it perfectly, so I'm going to read you that. And it's titled, "While Little Evidence Endures, Fourth Trial Opens in 1961 Killing." And this was January 10th in Lake Charles of 2005. Wilbert Rideau was on trial on Monday for the fourth time for a killing that has already cost him 44 years in prison. All white, all male juries convicted him of murder and sentenced him to death in 1961, 1964, and 1970. Each time, appeals courts eventually withdrew the verdicts, citing misconduct by government. Now, prosecutors are trying once again to obtain a conviction against Mr. Rideau, one that will stick. But the passage of almost half a century presents difficulties. So many of the original witnesses are dead. For instance, the prosecutors have asked stand-ins to play the part of 13 different witnesses, reading their original testimony to the jury. Rick Bryant, the district attorney, addressed the jurors on Monday with a version of events that is largely undisputed. "Most of you sitting here today probably weren't even born in February 1961, he said. Mr. Rideau, then a 19-year-old black porter at a fabric shop, walked a few buildings over to the Gulf National Bank and robbed it of $14,000. On February 16th of that year, he forced three bank employees, all white, into a teller's sedan. They drove to a gravel lane near a bayou on the edge of town, and Mr. Rideau shot all three of them. Jay Hickman, the bank's manager, took a bullet in the arm, but managed to escape by jumping in the swamp. Dora McCain, a teller, was shot in the neck and lay still, faking death. But Mr. Rideau caught another teller, Julia Ferguson. He stabbed her in the heart and slit her throat. Almost nothing tangible remains of those events so long ago. The fabric shop is gone. So is the bank. The gravel lane is now an on-ramp to I-10. Most of the evidence is lost, and most of the witnesses are dead. Mr. Rideau, now 62, is transformed too. He has, from prison, become an acclaimed journalist and documentary filmmaker. But the community rage lives on in this racially divided oil and gambling town near the Texas border. It's ferocious the way they hold on to this episode," said Reverend J.L. Franklin, a pastor who had come to the courthouse to see the state of Louisiana make its case. Mr. Rideau has never denied killing Miss Ferguson. Many whites say he should have been executed a long time ago. Many blacks say Mr. Rideau has paid his debt over time and would have been released years ago had his victim not been white and had not achieved the measure of fame in the meantime. Until the 1970s, people sentenced to life in Louisiana, which is what prosecutors now seek for Mr. Rideau, were generally released after serving 10 years, 6 months. On Monday, the jury heard from Mr. Hickman, the bank manager, but only in a sense. He died in 1988. A local radio announcer, Gary Shannon, stood in for him. "Mr. Shannon will be playing the part of Mr. Hickman," Judge David Ritchie told the jury, as though announcing an understudy. Reading from a 1970 trial transcript, Mr. Bryant asked the questions, and Mr. Shannon answered in a deep, rich voice. The exchange had the quality of a book on tape or a radio drama and was strangely compelling. Mr. Shannon explained why the three employees had tried to flee as they drove slowly through town. "We believed him when he said cooperation would get us free," Mr. Shannon said, quoting Hickman. "It was more than a hope. It was more of a hope than a belief. You cling to hope." Jurors could not gauge Mr. Hickman's credibility through Mr. Shannon, and Mr. Rideau's current lawyers could not cross-examine him. The reading of earlier testimony from an unavailable witness or two at a later trial is not particularly unusual, and the law allows it as long as there was an opportunity to cross-examine when the original testimony was taken. But Mr. Rito's trial may set some sort of record because Mr. Bryant said in his opening statement that he intended to present 13 witnesses that way. Mr. Bryant is not seeking the death penalty at this time, but he does not want Mr. Rito to ever taste freedom either. That man, he said during his opening statement, committed the murder of Julia Ferguson. Mr. Rito, wiry, wary, and very alert, looked on attentively. The jury that Mr. Bryant addressed is roughly representative of Calcasieu Parish's racial mix, 8 whites, 3 blacks, and a woman of mixed race. But it is not from here. Jurors were selected last week in Monroe in northern Louisiana, and deference to the passions of the case continue to arouse the mind. The defense strategy is complex. Appeals courts have turned back efforts to have the case dismissed outright, rejecting defense arguments and contending the stale evidence, double jeopardy, and prosecutorial vindictiveness. The jury is not meant to hear about the earlier trials. In small and subtle ways, Mr. Rito's lawyers will try to suggest that prosecutors have the wrong man. Not in the usual sense, but in that Mr. Rito, they say, has changed so completely that he bears little resemblance to the hapless teenage bank robber. As the editor of the Angolite, a prison newspaper, Mr. Rito won the George Polk Award, one of journalism's highest honors. A documentary that he co-directed was nominated for an Academy Award. That was The Farm, y'all. He has also been a correspondent for National Public Radio and has appeared on ABC's Nightline to discuss criminal justice with Chief Justice Warren Burger of the Supreme Court. For a time, he had made hundreds of public appearances to talk about the criminal justice system, often accompanied by a single unarmed guard. 4 pardon boards have recommended clemency, but governors have rejected each recommendation. Judge Ritchie has indicated that he will exclude most of the evidence. Still, said Stuart Green, a law professor at LSU, the essence of Mr. Rito's defense will be to ask the jury to ignore the law through some kind of jury nullification. Mr. Rito's lawyers must walk a fine line. One of them, George H. Kendall, a lawyer with Holland & Knight in New York, made a series of concessions on Monday morning. Let me tell you right now, he said, Mr. Rito is responsible for the death of Julia Ferguson. Mr. Kendall took issue only with a few details in the prosecution's version of the events. Mr. Rito shot the bank employees as they fled, not after lining them up, he said. And Mr. Kendall disputed something Miss McCain said she heard Mr. Rito say moments before he slit Miss Ferguson's throat. Don't worry, Mr. Rito said to Miss Ferguson as she pleaded for her life. According to Miss McCain's testimony in a 1970 trial, it'll be cool and quick. Miss McCain is alive, but apparently too ill to testify. Her earlier testimony will probably be read to the jury. Lawyers involved in the case said this crime occurred a long time ago in a different time. Mr. Kendall urged the jury to convict his client of manslaughter, not murder, saying that Mr. Rito's acts were those of a rash teenager caught up in a bank robbery gone wrong, not of premeditated murder. He did not tell them that the maximum term for manslaughter in 1961 was 21 years. A manslaughter conviction would almost certainly mean his client's prompt release. And I thought that was a really good article to kind of break down the entire trial and something you really needed to hear. On January 15th, y'all, just 5 days after that, the trial concludes. The 4th trial for Rito. And the New York Times prints this article. A black prison journalist who was convicted of murder 3 times by all white juries in 1961 death of a bank teller was found guilty of manslaughter Saturday by a racially mixed jury. The prisoner, Wilbert Rito, who gained fame for exposés of harsh Louisiana prison life, won his freedom after 44 years in prison. A manslaughter conviction, allows his release for time already served. He was in there 44 years. Maximum sentence was 21 for manslaughter. So he's automatically able to qualify for release, right? And the article continues on. Mr. Rito, who escaped the death row in the 1970s when the U.S. Supreme Court outlawed existing death penalty laws, had three previous convictions in the death of the teller, Julia Ferguson, who was white. The convictions were overturned on appeal. Mr. Rito, who was 19 at the time of Ms. Ferguson's death, never denied killing her. His lawyers contended he panicked after the bank robbery and stabbed her impulsively amid Louisiana's 1960s climate of racial hostility. In his fourth trial, Rito's lawyers sought a manslaughter verdict, a strategy that won his freedom. Prosecutors wanted the jury to find him guilty of murder to ensure Mr. Rito would end his days in prison, barring a pardon. Mr. Rito's lawyer, Julian Murray, told the jury that the killing was a terrible act, a criminal act, one for which he deserves great punishment, but not one for which he deserves to be locked up for the rest of his life. He did a terrible thing, but it wasn't murder, the lawyer said. That was a weird statement printed. And it shocked me when I read that because it was murder. I think what he intended to say was it wasn't first-degree murder where he had intent. Prosecutors derided Mr. Rito's contention that he acted in confusion and said that the crime was deliberate and coldly executed. The passage of time has made him older and hopefully wiser, but it certainly has not made him less guilty. That from Rick Bryant, who was the Calcasieu district attorney. So he gets freed after that fourth trial. And then they follow up with the question that, you know, everybody would ask after you get freed 44 years from prison, and that is, what is next for you, right? And the New York Times printed this. Wilbert Rito, an acclaimed journalist and confessed killer, walked out of the Calcasieu Parish Courthouse in Lake Charles a free man on Saturday after serving 44 years for stabbing a bank teller through the heart in 1961. In Mr. Rito's fourth trial for the killing, a jury on Saturday found him not guilty of murder, which would have resulted in a life sentence. Instead, the jury convicted him to manslaughter, which carries a maximum sentence of 21 years, and this effectively frees him. In an interview yesterday, Mr. Rito said that he had wasted no time in leaving Lake Charles. I bet he didn't. A racially divided city near the Texas border that remains fiercely split about whether he had paid his debt for the killing or whether he should have been executed long ago. The first thing I did when I left Lake Charles was to stop and get some sunshades, Mr. Rito said cheerfully over the phone, suggesting he needed to disguise himself. I should get a baseball cap, too. Three all-white juries sentenced him to death for the killings in 1961, 64, and 1970. All three convictions were overturned for government misconduct. The last conviction was thrown out in 2000 when an appeals court ruled that the exclusion of blacks from the grand jury indicted Mr. Rito was unconstitutional. The first trial, I think, the decision was in 8 minutes, said Mr. Rito, who is black. This time, we had only one white male. The latest jury, which also contained seven white women, two black women, and a woman of mixed race, and a black man, were from Monroe. They were stating that to make a point that you couldn't get a fair trial with the publicity in Lake Charles, and they didn't want another problem there like they had in previous convictions. They came from one of the most conservative regions of Louisiana, Mr. Rito said. We had some nervousness about that. These things happened 44 years ago before many of them were even born. This time, the jury deliberated for 5.5 hours, returning a verdict at 10:40 on Saturday night. Rick Bryant, the Calcasieu Parish District Attorney, said the jury had ignored the evidence. The verdict made no sense, he said yesterday. It's a subtle jury nullification type of thing. The jury basically said that there's still a conviction and he's done a lot of time. Mr. Rito has never denied that he robbed a Gulf National Bank branch near Lake Charles on February 16th of 1961, that he kidnapped three white employees of the bank, or that he shot them on a gravel laying near a bayou on the edge of town. Two of the employees survived, one by jumping into the swamp, the other by faking death. But Mr. Rito caught and killed Julia Ferguson, a teller, stabbing her in the heart. The two sides of the trial last week agreed on the basic facts. They just differed about whether the killing was part of a calculated plan or a result of a robbery gone awry committed by a hapless 19-year-old. Let's talk about that for a second. If you'll remember in part one, I told you about first-degree murder, which is what he was convicted of three times. You have to have intent. You must have intent for it to be first-degree murder. Intent is hard to prove in many cases, and that's why you'll see a lot of people get convicted of second-degree murder, which in the state of Louisiana, second-degree murder is punishable. You know, it's basically you get second-degree murder, it's life in prison in the state of Louisiana. First degree is the death penalty. So, you know, had they not went for first-degree murder and the death penalty originally, I don't know that any of this will be even talked about right now, because the intent is where the question is with Rito's case. Now, the article continued on. I've been saying for 44 years that, yes, I'm responsible, Mr. Rito said, but it didn't happen the way they said it did. They said I lined them up execution style. The evidence never supported that. Between the local media and legal system, though, they pretty much did what they wanted. A lot of what the community thought, though, handed me down word of mouth, all of that stuff, never really happened. Mr. Rito testified in his own defense, a potentially risky move given his acknowledged responsibility of the crime. But George Kendall, one of Mr. Rito's lawyers, said the testimony was crucial. The state's narrative was very simple. Understandable narrative, Mr. Kendall said. We have had to have an alternative narrative, and the only way we could do that was through our client. Mr. Rito said his initial plan was to lock up the employees and take a bus out of town with that $14,000 he had stolen. When that was foiled by an ill-timed phone call from the bank's main branch, he said, he came up with a second plan. He would drive the employees far out of town in the teller's car and escape as they walked back. But they jumped from the car before he could accomplish that, and in panic, he just started shooting. If I intended to kill those people and eliminate witnesses, I would have done it in the bank, Mr. Rito testified on Thursday. It never entered my mind I was going to hurt anybody. Theodore Shaw, the director counsel of the NAACP, which also represented Mr. Rito, said he found it hard to reconcile Mr. Rito's crime with the thoughtful and accomplished man he had become. I never lost sight of the fact that when Wilbert was 19, he did something incredibly stupid and tragic, Mr. Shaw said. On the other hand, he's not the man he was then. It's a true story of redemption. Mr. Shaw pointed to Mr. Rito's journalistic work as proof of his transformation. As editor of the Angolite, a prison newspaper, Mr. Rito won the George Polk Award. The Farm, a documentary he co-directed, was nominated for an Academy Award. Mr. Bryant, the prosecutor, said Mr. Rito's achievements were irrelevant. Rito's actions were driven by greed, Mr. Bryant said, referring to the robbery. It's not like he's been some sort of civil rights pioneer. He's a crook. Mr. Bryant said the prosecution had been at a disadvantage throughout the trial. It's very difficult to try a case that's 44 years old, he said. We had 13 witnesses who were unavailable, including two eyewitnesses, and we had to present them by reading transcripts. One of the survivors of the crime died in 1988, and the other was too ill to attend the trial. Mr. Rito said yesterday that he had not dared to make plans for what he would do as a free man. The pardon board recommended clemency four times, he said, but the governors rejected each recommendation. When you've been turned down and ridden that hope train for so long and keep getting knocked back, he said, you stop making plans. He declined to say where he planned to live. Undisclosed location, he said. Then he started to collect his thoughts. I'll be 63 in about three more weeks. I'm walking around in sweatpants. Most people my age are retired. I have no health insurance, no pension, no Social Security. I've got to start producing. I've got to get a job. I'd like to write. I've got so much to say. I'm going to continue to the extent that I can be a journalist. So that was immediately following the trial and his knowing that he was going to be released from prison and his release. So he leaves the bars, the walls, in the confines of Louisiana State Penitentiary in Angola. But there were concerns he had, like we just touched on in that article, primarily as it relates to work.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And guess what? We have him in his own words. Here he is discussing his concerns of finding a job after prison life.
I knew before I got out that I would be unemployable. I would not be able to work as a journalist, because the problem with being high profile is you have detractors, even people who don't know you. I mean, people who have no axe to grind with you, they still have opinions about you. I didn't have the advantage of anonymity, which is what helps a lot of guys. In real life, when you're talking about the media, you're talking about is driven by advertising, and advertisers may have a problem with you having this ex-con on the staff. So, that's just the way it is. I understood that before I got out. I understood that I would probably end up having to be self-employed. I'm doing consulting work. I'm taking what I know about the justice system and about criminals and defendants, and I'm consulting criminal defense lawyers, and also serving as faculty in training seminars. In fact, that's what I'm doing now, and that's what I've been doing. Understand, I'd heard a lot of ex-cons come back with all sorts of horror tales about life in the streets, and that sort of shaped expectations. And I imagine that people, especially since I was high profile, I expected people to be very ugly to me. I've been pleasantly surprised. I mean, look, people have been very nice, and I'm still in Louisiana. I have not had a single hostile experience.
Well, indeed, he did find some things to do. Y'all, in 2010, he published his own biography, and it was titled In a Place of Justice, which, hey, I'm a proud owner of a first edition copy of this book. Now, the book has seen huge success, and I do highly recommend it. It's a great read, y'all. He also authored many other books. He is a speaker and an author and a capital defense consultant. And in 2008, he married Linda LaBranch. So they're victims to consider, y'all, in this scenario. And after I concluded my research, I asked myself, much like probably some of you are doing now, how do I personally feel about Wilbert Rideau being released after 44 years? And it was a struggle. And I could only conclude this. If I were a family member or a close friend of the victims of that night in 1961, I would never, never want to see the day when Wilbert Rideau was freed. That I am certain of. And even those of you who are totally on this side of Wilbert Reno, maybe you might would admit at least that. I too would have fought with every last breath to ensure that his incarceration lasted forever. But I do feel that if anyone has been rehabilitated, which to me is just another word for changed, it is Wilbert Reno. He's a different person entirely from who he was in 1961. And I do not feel any less safe because he is outside the confines of prison. And that's what I base my personal thoughts on. Do I feel any less safe? I don't. And, you know, I don't think he'll ever reoffend again. Of course, my thoughts and prayers always go out to the victims. And this case is no exception. And as I said, if I were in their shoes, I'd want him there forever. Lastly, you may ask yourself, why did I name this episode The Richest Man in Bloody Angola? Well, a quick search of net worth can answer that question. Wilbert Reno, according to net worth, has amassed a net worth of over $17 million since his release from prison. I would say he's doing pretty good, and I wish him well. I'm Jim Chapman, and for Woody Overton, we are your host of Bloody Angola, a podcast 142 years in the making, the complete story of America's bloodiest prison. Peace.
I walk a straight line, shackled and chained. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.